For 91.3 WKY News, I'm Dr. Greg Davis on medicine. Maybe we learned long ago in school that there was a split between the body and the mind, but we now know that is actually not true. My guest today is going to talk about a grant that she's involved in that addresses that fact. I'm speaking today with Dr. Suzanne Segerstrom, professor of psychology here at the University of Kentucky, and she's recently been awarded a grant to study the effects of stress on the immune system in our aging population.
Yeah, we're very excited to get this grant. We're very grateful to the National Institute on Aging for giving us this money. We've been studying the interaction between the mind and the immune system for some time in this cohort of older people living in Lexington. And what's starting to come out in the scientific literature now is that these interactions are having effects on another organ that you don't typically think of when you think of the immune system, which is the brain. So we were really excited to have this opportunity to expand the things that we're looking at now in terms of how people feel and how their immune system is functioning, and then looking at the consequences for their brains.
I think, you know, one thing that some of us, speaking of myself, of a certain age, grew up with a paradigm in health and medicine of this sort of Cartesian split between mind and body. And one of the things that's been a primary focus of study for you is that really that's a fallacy. That's not really a valid way of looking at the totality of our health, that the mind and the body are inextricably bound.
Absolutely. I think it's important to remember that everything that's going on in your mind is instantiated somewhere in your body. Like, we don't have thoughts that arise from something other than our physical selves. They don't feel physical to us, but they are physical, and they have physical correlates. And many of those then connect to the immune system, and then products of the immune system, proteins like pro-inflammatory cytokines and other kinds of interactions, then feed back into the brain. So one of the things we're particularly interested in is how these cytokines might lead to degeneration in different parts of the brain. We think that people who are under chronic stress, for example, might be making more pro-inflammatory cytokines. And as a consequence, areas of the brain such as the hippocampus, which is where a lot of memory is instantiated, or in the prefrontal cortex where things like decision-making and judgment are instantiated, that these cytokines might be involved in actually shrinking those parts of the brain. And then, of course, that has consequences for maybe even feeling more stress because you feel like you're having memory problems or you're making bad decisions. So you could even get sort of a vicious cycle that starts with psychology, actually, and ends up in brain health.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Suzanne Segerstrom, professor of psychology at the University of Kentucky, about the interplay between stress and the immune system in our aging population. So these cytokines, which are pro-inflammatory chemicals within our body, things that are involved with ultimately with inflammation, when we're under stress, those can be increased. And that can actually, if we're talking about shrinking those particular portions of our brain over time that deal with emotion, judgment, higher thought, then potentially, I guess you could make the leap of asking the question, can chronic stress lead to emotional lability of interacting with others differently than perhaps might be healthy, up to and including maybe even early onset dementia? Is that something you're thinking about?
We can think about that. Some of those things like emotions are more in the amygdala that seems to be a little bit more resilient. But what might happen is that prefrontal cortex, that is the judgment, decision-making, but also self-control, that restraint, that ability to dampen our emotions or temporarily suppress them because it's not appropriate to show that emotion in that moment, or it's not a social message that you want to send, that kind of facility might be impaired. As for frank dementia like Alzheimer's disease, it's not clear whether you need like one hit for Alzheimer's disease, like you need one risk factor like a gene, or whether maybe multiple hits are necessary. So there are plenty of people who are genetically at high risk for Alzheimer's disease but don't get it. And maybe something like lower levels of inflammation could explain why those people are resistant. Another thing that we're interested in that we're looking at in this study are infections. There are a lot of viruses and parasites that we get through our lifetime that most people have by the time they reach older age that are silent. Like we don't even know we have them. Things like cytomegalovirus is one of them, and toxoplasmosis is one of the parasites. It's possible that those infections are actually contributing to declines and maybe risk for dementias, either directly because, for example, toxoplasmosis can infect the brain, or indirectly, cytomegalovirus can increase the amount of inflammation in the body, decrease more functional kinds of immune responses, and indirectly then lead to poorer brain function.
And ultimately, do you think this grant will give you a study that you'll publish the results of and then move on to other questions from there?
I think we'll probably get multiple studies. So there are a number of different things we're looking at. We're looking at cognitive function, so how people are doing behaviorally, how their brains are doing in a behavioral sense. Then we're looking at some structural things like the size of the hippocampus, the size of the prefrontal lobes. And we're also looking at some things like connectivity, so how well are parts of the brain communicating with each other. And we're doing that in collaboration with a number of different people here at UK, primarily Brian Gold, who's a cognitive neuroscientist, and another cognitive neuroscientist at Penn State named John Haken.
And I know Dr. Charlie Lutz in the Department of Pathology.
Yeah, Charlie Lutz is working with us on the immunology. Fred Schmidt and David Barry are collaborating with neuropsychology. So you can see that when you start looking at the interactions between these different systems, between psychology and immunology and neurology, you have to have a lot of people working together. It's a great team. I'm really, really glad to be working with these folks.
Is there anything, Dr. Segerstrom, we've not discussed that you would want our listeners to hear about?
You know, I think I have to give a lot of credit to the people who are in the study. So we've had a couple hundred people participate in the study over the years. And one of the things that really helped us be successful with this proposal was the fact that we know a lot about these people, that they've been volunteering their time and energy to this study, some of them for more than 10 years. So to be able to look at their brains indirectly, of course, we're not looking directly at their brains, but to be able to scan their brains and know, like, what's the trajectory that leads up to that kind of brain, that's something that's kind of unique. It was a real strength that not many other studies would have to offer. So I want to send a big thanks out to anybody who's in the study.
My thanks today to Dr. Suzanne Segerstrom, professor of psychology at the University of Kentucky, for talking with us today about the interplay between stress and the immune system. As always, for more information, visit our website at WUKY.org. With health news you can use, I'm Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine.
Dr. Greg Davis is a forensic pathologist at the University of Kentucky. He volunteers his time to bring important medical news to the community. You can hear more of his programs at WUKY.org.